Hi, this is Dave Raymond from Hidden Hospitals, and this is my chapter of As the Story Grows.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Man, being realistic.
As the story grows.
You got this, Travis. Make him wait for it. Boom.
Let's get started. Dave Raymond at Hidden Hospitals, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing very good, Travis. Thanks for having me, man.
You're welcome. You said you haven't done a lot of podcasts. Well, welcome to how many technical difficulties can happen just trying to record a damn podcast.
It's technology for you. Every time you go back and visit it, something's changed.
It's good until it isn't. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Man, I'm stoked to have you on. As we were saying before, now we have to be organic about it and pretend we didn't just say this 5 minutes ago, but... being on the podcast, when you have a great guest, sometimes you kind of act like you're getting a sales lead and you say, hey man, now that you get the vibe of the show and you see how the conversations go, do you recommend anybody? And without hesitation, Shane Osner from Everything in Slow Motion immediately recommended you. He's like, you have to talk to Dave. You have to talk to Hidden Hospitals.
Shane is, like I said, Shane is a sweetheart, man. He just had us down in Kansas City. Hidden Hospitals played with his band, Everything in Slow Motion. And it was the first really great show that we've ever had in Kansas City. I've been visiting there for years. And I mean, the people, the music, the crowd, all of it was awesome. And Shane himself.
So thank you, Shane, for introducing me to Dave. I'm excited to talk to you because I've never heard of Hidden Hospitals before. Until Shane mentioned you guys, I went and did a little bit of research, started digging around, and I asked Dave, I asked Shane, what can you tell me about him? Can you give me any background? And he gave me a couple little interesting little tidbits, and I went and listened to some music, and I just want to start from the beginning. We're just two brand new friends sitting down and having a drink. Why don't you give me the backstory? Tell me how we arrived where we are today.
Hidden Hospital started a little over 5 years ago. We started here in Chicago as the end of a couple of bands that we were in before, Demira, which was a band I was in, and Kiss Kiss is a band that Jared was in. And our intention was to continue Demira, but it'd been so long since we put our last record out with Equal Vision. We were going into just starting writing. It had been almost 3 years at that point, so we figured that was the time to start new, to put a new book cover on things and just do it our way. And that's how we started. And it's been a cool story ever since.
How old are you?
I'm 36.
36. So Hidden Hospitals got going right around 31 years old for you?
I think we decided to... Yeah. I think we started... the year before we announced the band. So yeah, I think I started it at 30 and then, you've been active for about 5 years.
Okay. So let's cover the 30 years before Hidden Hospitals for a little bit. Tell me about, did you grow up in Chicago? What were some influences? I mean, I got 5 years on you. I just turned 41. So, I mean, I shouldn't be too far off with no, I mean, yesterday I just turned 41. So,
that's awesome.
Thanks, dude. Tell me some of the background, some of the stuff you were listening to, so we can all identify with what you were into and stuff.
I think that one of the biggest influencers I had was that I was trained on piano. My mom had me at piano since I was about 3 years old, and okay. I painstakingly stuck with it all the way through school.
God bless you. I couldn't do it. I couldn't hang, man.
I honestly didn't think I could do it either. And I mean, like any kid, it's not what you want to be doing, sitting down and, you know, playing piano. It's not like the most fun thing in the world. If anybody sat you down and made you play a guitar, you probably wouldn't want to do it anyway. But
sure.
I grew up listening to 80s and 90s hip hop. I listened to hair metal and power metal. And then I discovered a band called Weezer, and that blew everything out of the water for me. Weezer was the first band that made me want to start a band. And I mean, that was the only music I knew by the time I picked a guitar up, which was pretty late in life compared to most people that that play in bands and play rock and roll.
Weezer pulled you out of hair metal.
Well, I mean, hair metal is pretty responsible for Weezer if you go back and
sure.
get into their history. But yeah, I mean, when I heard Weezer, the way they were doing things, I couldn't believe what was going on. It was like the Beatles zoomed ahead to when there were heavy Mesa amps and discovered power chords, and you know, and everything was fuzzy and crunchy and powerful.
Wow. Okay, that big of an influence on you. That's amazing. Okay.
Huge, massive. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. I remember hearing the Blue album, the first album, and thinking, oh, okay, these guys are really good. I really enjoy them. I really didn't bear down and dig my toes in until Pinkerton.
God damn you half Japanese girls, do it to me every time. All the redheads said you shred the cello, and I'm jello, baby. But you won't talk, won't look, won't. I'm the epitome, a public enemy. Why you wanna go and do me like that? Come down on the street and dance with me. I'm a lie like you.
Yeah, that was the gateway for a lot of people. And I mean, I think myself and anybody that was really, really attached to the Blue Album felt Pinkerton was alienating at first. I mean, I was at the record store the day before it came out, and the stack of discs were there on the counter, and I begged the guy to sell me a CD, and he wouldn't do it. And it was like you know, Santa Claus showing up with presents and just being like, nope, you know. Mm-hmm. But we'd
be like,
we
it'd be like Santa Claus showing up on the 24th and be like, come on, dude, it's one day.
Yeah. So we went back to the mall the next day and picked the discs up, and we went and sat in the car and listened to the whole record two times in a row. And I don't think we said anything to each other. We were just pretty let down. And like, but then, you know, as you take that record and you discover where they were and just how cool those songs were, it was almost as if that record should have came first. In a lot of ways.
I can relate with that. Yeah, I just felt like I was coming out of all kinds of metal and technical loop-de-loops and that kind of stuff. And the Blue Album was, it was really, really good pop rock to me. And mm-hmm. Pinkerton to me was like the alternative. I always elevated to the, I wanted everything to have the Primus side up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And Pinkerton just revealed... Oh, okay. They're not just the four chords and my name is Jonas. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm not gonna posture and pretend I'm a huge Weezer fan, but Pinkerton is the album that got me in.
I started to appreciate that record a lot too when I was in college, because I went to school and minored in sound production. We had a teacher that stepped in and taught a couple semesters. His name's Dave Friedman, and he recorded and produced a handful of the songs on Pinkerton, a lot of the ones that people love.
Wow.
And yeah, and it was cool, like, having that lens, and I discovered really cool artists because of him, like Mogwai and the Flaming Lips, and that it's just cool when you always find, like, a new scope to see the same thing at, you know, a different vantage of something that you thought you knew until sure. you get a new spin on it.
That's neat that Weezer led you to Mogwai. That's I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that before.
it's crazy. And I remember when a friend of mine was playing me Mogwai, and I was like I said, I grew up listening to hip hop and metal, and then Weezer. It was like those were the bands that I knew. And then my friend shows me this Mogwai tape, and I'd never heard a band do that, where they go from like these really very like, it's, you know, like the heartbeat almost goes down to just stopping, and then suddenly they're louder than you can even handle. And I mm-hmm. was like, I'd never heard anything like that. And I was talking about them in class, and my teacher, who I'm pretty sure was hungover, he was drinking coffee and he smelled of booze, and he was from Germany. He's got a really thick German accent, and I just didn't know if he had like a dry sense of humor or what, but like he came over and he's like, oh yeah, Mogwai, they're playing tonight at BJ's, and which was a bar right across the street from where I was living in this small town where we went to college. And I was like, yeah, okay, yeah, right. And he's like, all right, walk. And he walked off. I was like, okay. And on my walk home, I walked by that bar because I was like, if that's at all true, I can't not have checked this out, and then I'd kick myself forever. And sure enough, on a crappy piece of paper, written in marker, Mogwai tonight, 11 p.m. And it was awesome, man. This tiny bar that you could fit maybe 50 people in, and they just peeled everybody's face back with how loud and incredible they were on like a 5-foot stage. It was immense. And they were in town recording with Dave Friedman. That's why they were in town. So it made sense after the fact.
Gotcha. So did you wind up standing next to your hungover German professor watching Mogwai?
Yeah. Yeah, he was there.
That's pretty cool. All right. There you go.
Yep.
Did that find any favor in the class later? Like, you think maybe you had a B on a paper and maybe you found you an A?
Man, if it did, I didn't know. I was so lost back then. I wasn't paying attention to the right things. Fair enough. I was like, yeah.
Cool, man. All right, very good. Guilty pleasure time. If you came out of hair metal, what still totally is your jam? Like, what's not that they ever play it on the radio anymore, unless you go dig for like an internet 80s hair metal station or something, but what's something that comes on that still makes you go, oh, hell yeah, I'm going to sing every word of this?
Man, I know every Poison song. I know every, like,
Poison. Oof.
I didn't. It's just, but like, they are my guilty pleasure, and some of it, like, makes me cringe. There's, like, so much, there's stuff that even I couldn't listen to back then. Like, my friends are really into, like, Def Leppard, and I just didn't get it back then. And now when I listen to that stuff, I feel like that band is from the future.
Got it.
Like, their stuff was so slick and so polished, and the melodies are like, earworm. It just gets into you.
So far beyond produced. Like, just
yeah.
So perfect.
Yeah. All of it. And I had every Iron Maiden album. That was like my thing, and like I still listen to that stuff to this day. But there's especially now as an adult, when I listen to stuff and I hear the difference between the two songwriters in that band, I've very much taken, like, picked my favorites, and I'm like, yeah, okay.
Sir, you are among friends here at the podcast.
Awesome.
for a grown-ass man that had to get rid of a lot of his childhood things and move on and grow into adulthood, I'm still staring at my Iron Maiden Number of the Beast lunchbox and my and my Iron Maiden Peace of Mind bobblehead doll. They ain't leaving, dude. So
that's awesome.
Huge Iron Maiden fan. Yeah, that's great. Poison, though? Oh, man. Oof. Man, I hated them.
I know there was a lot of that stuff. I would consider Motley Crue, I'd say, like hair metal.
Oh, hell yeah.
Even at the time, like Appetite for Destruction, Guns N' Roses, I loved all of that stuff. But it was so much lumped into one thing.
Uh-huh.
When I was that age, it was like there was hip hop, and then there was metal, and then there was rock, but rock was kind of like what the dudes that worked at the garage played in boomboxes. Like,
gotcha.
You know, it wasn't. So it was that, and then there was country. So that was the only couple of flavors to pick from.
Gotcha.
So,
yeah, I remember those days. This is fun. Man, this is great. I'm feeling less embarrassed about myself for still like wanting to sing along to like when Heaven from Warrant comes on one of those radio stations.
Oh, dude, yeah.
And I'm like, I still remember every word.
That was the band that I had to hide from my parents, because when Cherry Pie came out, and it was like the first record I had with the parental advisory thing on the front.
Okay.
And not to mention the entire album is just like the biggest, most obvious innuendo ever.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, I got that tape, and my dad grabbed it, and he's like, it's gone, I found it, and never let them know that I found it.
That album taught me who Tipper Gore was. Because
yep, me too.
I didn't, Tipper Gore sounds like a place. Ode to, you know, there was a track on Ode the end called Gore. Ode to Tipper Gore, and they just took every time the vocalist, Janny Lane, is that his name?
Yeah, I think so, man. Let's check that out.
God rest his soul. I think he passed away. They like recorded every F-bomb he dropped on an entire tour, and they just strung it together in one track just to put it over the edge for the parental advisory. They called it an Ode to Tipper Gore. And I was like, where's Tipper Gore? And my friend's like, you asshole. That's that's the lady with the PMRC. And I was like, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Janny Lane. Man, his voice was out of this world, too. Just, I don't know, man. That stuff got into me, and I didn't realize it then, but it was ingredient for a lot of things in my life.
Sure. Yeah, let's acknowledge it as a stepping stone, man. Absolutely. Isn't it funny how everybody looks back and they're like, yeah, look at those guys. They look like idiots. They were all dressed in like fake leather pants, and they wore makeup and teased up their hair. Has anyone looked around lately? I mean, aren't we right back there again?
Yeah, in a lot of ways. I feel, though, like I look at that stuff and I just think about the for all of the reasons that are hard to be in a band and to do it with other people. And I think about how excessively beyond, you know, the end line they went with that stuff. Like you said, the teased hair and the makeup and the leather pants. And like, it was beyond a lifestyle. Like, that stuff's not easy. Kiss, like when the way Kiss dressed and performed.
Yeah.
It's no one does that. Like, dudes roll out of vans. They look like they haven't ever slept, and they're, you know, they're drunk from the day before, and there's food stuck to their face. And then for some reason their show's $20, and it's like, I don't know. It's like I when I started music, it's, and I still to this day, like, we're DIY and we have a very punk rock ethic. It's just there's a weird blurred line that I think needs to get sharper between like, this is okay. Like, this is okay to be on stage and to do, and like, this is very intentional, and this is, you know, this is okay to ask of people's time. And then there's the other side of it where it's just like accidental. Like,
I agree.
You know, I said,
I completely agree. I've even said that all the way down to, I mean, who am I? I'm no authority, but I mean, even if you're showing up just to play acoustic Jimmy Buffett songs at a bar, don't show up with a backwards baseball cap and cargo shorts and flip flops. You just look like, you look like you just stopped working in the kitchen and you came out to sing for a while. Like, take this shit seriously. You're in front of people and they paid to be here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's the thing. And I mean, that's something that we kick around ourselves, and it's not something that we get to talk to many people about, but it's just the fact that like, there's so many ingenuine ways to say I'm thankful for people's time. You know, like when you say it on stage, I think that people are very used to hearing that. It's like stage banter, right? But it's, I don't know. There isn't a way that you can walk around and individually thank anyone for even, you know, I'm saying like 30 seconds of their time when they gave you true consideration. And if 30 seconds of your set didn't captivate them and they're not into it, fine. But at the very least, they gave you a chance, and they don't owe you anything past that. And
correct.
I don't know. It's just, it's very easy to lose sight of that stuff.
It is very easy to lose sight of it. My friends and I talk about that a lot, where, back in the day, if you heard a hair metal band and you were like, Trav, come over and check this out, you pop in a cassette tape, you hit play, and it just starts rolling. And you have to digest the entire thing, and you kind of sit there, and that's what you're doing at that time, is listening to that album. Now, iTunes gives you 30 seconds. And I mean, you have a band like Mogwai that takes about 2 minutes to get going. Yeah. All right, you've lost me. I'm not into it. Nah, nope.
Man, that's a good point, man. Like, what could 15 seconds of a Mogwai song show you, or 15 seconds of a Bjork song? Like, what? It isn't enough.
15 seconds of a Mogwai song. I'm checking to see if my speakers are working correctly, because all I hear is feedback and weird noises and stuff. Like,
yeah.
But 8 minutes into it, you're like, okay, I kind of get it, and you're still not appreciating it correctly, because, like, I find bands like Mogwai annoying if I'm trying to listen to a band like that while I'm working. Because it's just like, like, I have my headphones in and I'm doing my job and I just hear like this banging, clanging, and droning thing in the background. And it's kind of like, I don't want to listen to that right now. That's, sit down, and it deserves your time. It's time to sit down with a drink and space out and spend time inside that album. And man, we just don't do that anymore, you know?
I get to talk about that a lot with a couple of my close friends, and I think that there's always been this like analog that I make, and it goes back to when we were just talking about, like, when we were kids and you wait and you're stoked on a record, and the only way to hear it is to either your friend has it and they sit you down, which is a captive listening experience, and it's from someone that you love that says, "Yo, Trav, you got to hear this record," and then that's your barrier to entry, right? Like, somebody that you respect says, "Yo, check this out," and you do.
Exactly.
Yep. Or the other side of it is, you know, you're a kid and you don't have crap and you saved up $17 for the CD, and then you buy it and you take it home and you listen to it and it sucks and you hate it. But then you're also, there was this like semblance of, I'm stubborn and I just wasted $17 of my money, so I'm gonna get my $17 out of this record. 5 or 10 listens in, you finally get what the artist is doing. Like, Pearl Jam's Go was that record for me. Took it home, hated it. I was so bummed out that I'd wasted money on it, and then that record is one of my favorite records of all time. Like, for real, like, that record top to bottom is just, and it's there's no way I would ever been able to appreciate Go now, because there's no way I would have spent 20 or 30 listens on a record that I didn't A, want to listen to, or B, didn't have the foresight to know that I was going to fall in love with it.
Got it. That's a great point. I just had that conversation recently. I purposely went to the mall in, let's take a stab at it and say 93, 94. I went to get Primus Tales from the Punch Bowl the day it was coming out, because I have to have that the day it comes out. That's like one of my favorite bands. And while I was at the mall, I was like, you know what? This Bush 16 Stone album that everyone is flipping out about, what is the big deal? I just bought it. I was in there to spend $17 on the Primus album, and I decided to drop 34, and I was like, screw it, I'll buy the Bush album too, because everybody is so hyped on this band, let me check it out. And I bought a $17 album that I probably only heard that one hit that they had, and I listened to it. I still don't like it, but I gave that album 6 or 7 times around before I decided, like, nah, this just isn't my particular flavor of candy, man. But because I bought it, I tried to like it, because I spent the money and I invested in it. And there's something to be said in that, you know? I mean, now it would be, here, listen to this song for 20 seconds. Nope. And I didn't spend a dime on it, and I heard it for free, and I disregard it, and they suck forever now. And I never need to listen to them again, because I have 10,000 other things to listen to today, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's the nature of things and where we are, and I don't feel, it's nothing that I would want to bitch about or be like, man, like, music's just the worst right now, and like, there's no point. There isn't, because it's not for everybody else. It's for you. Like, if you don't want to do it, then don't do it.
Right on.
But it's true, because like, it is. It makes me a little bit sad, because I did grow up at a time thinking like of when I bought a record, and you sit there and you pine through the insert, and the way that like opening a CD or a cassette tape smells, and like you sit there and you listen to it, and in the nostalgia of like where you were, who you were in love with then, like what you were going through, the clothes that you wore, absolutely, your friends, the crap that you talked about, mm-hmm, the trips that you would take listening to that particular music and what you were doing, it's just transformative. And like, I struggle with it now. Like, anytime I try to listen to new music, I find myself going back to my things that are my personal favorites, fine, but like, unless somebody points me in the right direction, it's tough for me to find new stuff that I gravitate towards. Mm-hmm. But then, like, you know, like wildfire, when something really stirs emotion in me and that I love it, I seriously can't shut up. I tell everybody about it.
I'm the same way.
Yeah.
I'm the same way. Dude, you got to hear this. Dude, you got to hear this. I love it. I love it. I love it. And they're like, yeah, I listen to it. I don't know. Okay, come listen to it with me. And then I sit there and I'm like that annoying guy that's explaining the movie. Like, how is this not your favorite movie too? Don't you get it? Like, this guy, like, look how good he did of a job explaining this and this backstory. Like, I try to, like, walk the people into it. I'm like, how do you not think that this is an absolute gem, you know? And I really try to sell it. I become, like, that band's loudest trumpeter, you know? And I want people to love it as much as I do. And some people are just like, yeah, dude, it's good. I don't know. I don't love it.
There's the issue too, I think, in that it's the interesting part is that all, like, a lot of kids growing up, and myself and even people of my own age, your age, I feel like they're current. They're like, there's life-changing albums that have come into their periphery, have gone right in front of their sight line. They might have given it 10 seconds, and it probably was their favorite album of their entire life. And there's really no way to rectify that because, right, like you said, like, if I'm not taken in the first 5 or 10 seconds, then why, like, why am I going to stick with it? Like, I need to listen to music right now. I want something that I want to jam on right now.
Sure.
And,
yeah.
You know, you move on. And just like you said, that's the nail in the coffin. If you didn't pull me in, then that band sucks forever and I will never listen to it again. I don't have to because, sure, there's a billion other things. But I do believe this. I do believe that because the reward in music now for musicians is very low, that it is such a personal thing. And like, you have to have personal, you have to basically be rewarded by it yourself, that it will push music to a place that we kind of come full circle and get back to that. I feel like we have to, where like those 10 or 20 million other choices are just going to eventually be so plain that, sure, people are going to rise up and it's the ones that stick to the wall will stand out.
I can dig that, because if there's a song written for popularity, popularity, mm-hmm, that's specifically just to get your attention, then okay, it got your attention. I already need to be moving on to the next one. I need to produce. Whereas, you know, you've been to the shows where there's a band on stage being earnest and absolutely pouring their guts onto the stage because they're into what they're into. You forgive Nirvana for hitting a wrong note, right? I mean, like, they were too busy bowling you over and being an impressive band to worry about, okay, that string went out of tune a little bit because he's thrashing on it so hard, or you know, like that's when it seeps in and becomes like it matters. It isn't about, yeah. Anyway, you know what I'm saying.
No, absolutely.
We can,
man,
rabbit trail this for hours.
yep, for sure. No, that stuff's all unique, and that's the thing that I think is awesome about live shows, like nights that the singer's voice was blown out, or like, sure, you know, an amplifier fell apart, or this drummer smashed a snare drum, or somebody fell off the stage. And it's like, those things tend to be like the only people that really stew negatively on that stuff are the bands themselves. Like,
yeah,
we talk about every time we play a show, it's like, yo, how was your show? Did you have a good show? Like, ask individually, how was your show?
Right.
And you know, you connect on it, and it's like, our experience is different than anybody watching it. You know, they're just like, you strive for perfection and to feel like you were present and really in it, and that everybody was in sync. It's like,
mm-hmm,
and every time that you hit that high, the next night is either going to less likely be higher or most likely be lower. You know,
new standard has been set. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the bar gets adjusted every night. So let's bring this back to Hidden Hospitals. And I really like what you were talking about, how, the you're there for them, you're there for the entire aesthetic, and you don't want to roll out of the van looking like, you know, you still have a Taco Bell stuck in your beard or whatever because you didn't shave. But I will say this about Hidden Hospitals: you guys are a good, slick looking band. I'm not talking about you. I don't think you're good looking at all. No, I'm kidding. But I mean, like, when you go to the Hidden Hospitals website, or you go check out the Instagram page and everything, it's, I mean, at the risk of sounding like an ass kisser, you owe me nothing, I owe you nothing. It is a slick production, man. The stuff looks fantastic. It is part of what was drawing me in to check your band out more was, why do your Instagram pictures all look like a puzzle piece? You know, and they kind of all fit together. And why does the drop down on your website just say Roman numeral 1, 2, 3, and 4? Why doesn't it say media and tour like everything else? Why are you making me push buttons and dig further? And you did a hell of a job on it. I don't know if that's you or someone else in the band or what, but can we talk a little bit about how Hidden Hospital has like a certain aesthetic about it that I really dig it, man. I feel like you guys have kind of tapped that vein a little bit with your artistic vision, with what you're trying to do with Hidden Hospitals. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, I've been I do the design and the visual stuff for the band. It's I think the part of what you're praising a little bit is that it's unified, and I think that helps when it comes from a single source.
Sure.
And the double-edged sword of that is that, you know, there's like I really often have to ask myself, like, hey, does this fit within the constraints that you've set for yourself? And then you answer yourself with this loaded answer of, yes, of course it doesn't. And then, you know, so it's always like an evolution. I just started out with a blank canvas, and it was the first time in my life that I saw that as very valuable and also very, you know, kind of cumbersome. So we started out with minimalistic, we were just colors. It was just gray and it was red, and we had our logo, and we picked one typeface, and that did everything in that. And the stuff, you know, when Surface Tension released, it was the first time that we'd ever used imagery.
Okay.
And I thought, well, this will be interesting, because I think that it feels right and it's the right time to do it. But the photographer that shot the album art, his name's Jarrett Ferratusco.
Okay.
And all of the photographs you've seen on like our Instagram, social and stuff, anything recent has been by him too. He toured with us on this last tour, and we just had a really great working thing. Like his lens for shooting things is not typical by any sense. He picks the macro, he zooms in on moments, and it's never the bigger picture. It's always these small things that you're not paying attention to.
Hmm.
And I think that lends itself to the name of the band, like Hidden Hospitals, like things that you're not necessarily paying attention to that would otherwise bring you joy, but you need somebody to kind of pull it out, and you know, either you discover it yourself or maybe you never do. It's there.
Got it.
So, I mean, yeah, it's an evolution, and it's been a lot of fun, and it's been cool. And I'm actually very thankful to know that you think it feels very cohesive. I appreciate that, because there isn't somebody to look over my shoulder and often say, like, yeah, man, you're going off the rails here. Bring it back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But
it just has a certain aesthetic to it where I looked at everything once, admittedly, because, you know, you're getting home from work and rushing to get ready and that kind of thing. But everything from watching your Audio Tree live, I love, man, how great is Audio Tree?
Dude, they're great, man. Absolutely.
Watching that live performance all the way to the live performance at some bar in Illinois. I don't remember the name of it. This is all YouTube, digging around, looking at Instagram, looking at hiddenhospitals.com, I knew it all belonged together. Not just because I knew what I was looking for, but it just had like a familiarity to it. And it makes sense that it's coming from one source. It's coming from one person's vision. And I just like the I just like the direction of it. I really think it's very like you said, zeroing in on moments and stuff. That's really cool. Some of the pictures are very specific. They're very zoomed in. They're very macro was the term you used.
Yep.
Rather than the big pulled back picture, the giant wide stage shot with all the smoke and everything. Because there's nothing wrong with those shots, except that we've seen them on every band's website, right? So it's kind of neat that Hidden Hospitals is kind of bringing it down a little closer, you know?
I also think it speaks to our personalities as well. Like the big, you know, like the big stage productions and like smoke and all that stuff. It is in us. And if that were the production we made, it's just not our personality to show that we're not bigger than life. We are these human beings that came from this these ingredients, these things, and like right. we are those guys that, you know, grew up stoked that we figured out power chords and like that we could finally like first time to bang on a drum set, or like that first time that you figured out that you could like scream your ass off, and like there's a way to do music with this. It's sure. like that's a, you know, that's it. And humble beginnings, as you said earlier, it's like just it.
Now, something else that Shane specifically brought up, which I would have never caught on to in glimpsing at the videos and everything, he said he would actually love to hear you discuss a little bit, and you can get techie and you can get nerdy on me here, and I'll hang the best I can, but he said that you have a very specific, unique, literally your stage setup is very unique in the sense that you run Ableton and don't even really use typical equipment like every other band we've ever seen, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's been that too has been like a long evolution. So to continue doing music and doing rock bands and like doing this kind of stuff, there's like, you have to keep yourself interested in it and you have to keep yourself engaged. And I'm not going to be like, I'm going to be blunt and say that I'm not interested in toting a half stack around at practice spaces and you know, revisiting rock and roll with my friends after, you know, 7 p.m. on a weeknight. Like it's not interesting to me. So like this band explored a lot of territory that I never got to with my previous bands. Like okay. Demira, the band I was in before, was so prog that there was so much focus on like the music itself, like the actual, literally like the rhythms, the actual notes, the performance of those things. I didn't know how to bring effects into that stuff. So that was kind of a mantra in this band, and we discovered early on that like doing things slow and steady was so much harder than doing things fast and chaotic.
Okay.
Because you can really, really, you can convince yourself that at 300 miles an hour that you're awesome at stuff. until you slow it down and try to hold, it's like balance is really what it is. We have these long passages in this band where things oscillate and change, but it's really like, it's one thing. And if you don't set it off right, if you don't hold it right, it exposes itself because it's so bare and there's nothing around it to hide it. And So that's kind of where we came from. And then I discovered also through that process of getting like effects and pedal boards and stuff that mm-hmm. I suck at pedal boards. I'm terrible at them. Okay. Cause we started doing shows and like, I'd have this awesome pedal board, which I enjoyed as a guitar player, but we'd get to like the chorus of a song and I'd be futzing with the pedals. And like, all of a sudden I've missed the really cool downbeat of the chorus. And I also wasn't there as the front man to sing the first opening line of, you know what I mean? Like,
okay.
Albeit I made a bunch of mistakes while smashing my foot all over the pedal board. So sure. Okay. I already understood MIDI, and that's, I, you know, what Shane is speaking to that we do, I think, differently than a lot of bands is that everything's digital, and that everything is a controller for something else. So we come from one source, MIDI, which is it's a communication program, communication language that's really old, actually. We use that to manipulate everything, our amps, our voices, drums, drum racks, all that stuff. I can keep up with that stuff too. It goes further and just into the fact that, like, now our stage setup is entirely like, we get off and ask, like, hey, can we borrow a guitar cab, can we borrow a bass cab, and like, you can't, we don't have them. Yeah, those things.
Let's start there. Let's say right now I'm gonna go see Hidden Hospitals tonight. I'm gonna walk in, what am I gonna see on stage?
You're gonna see a drum kit, and you're gonna see two basically 4 foot tall PA speakers, which are full range, and that's what we play all of our guitars, all of our bass, that's everything goes through those, as well as Jared, our drummer, a lot of his drum sample stuff comes through there, where he's not hitting the drum kit, he's hitting a controller, so it doesn't just sound like he's tapping on rubber with wood, you know.
Wow. Okay.
And that's it. And Aaron, our bassist, and I stand in front of those things, and that's a very minimal setup. But it wasn't to be unique, and it wasn't to be different. It wasn't to be even like, I'm really stoked on gear and now I can finally do this. Really, it just comes down to, we're a nobody's band, and you know, we don't have anybody vouching for us. It seems like 7 nights a week on tour, we get the Monday night sound intern that's getting paid a pitcher of Miller. And when you get for real, like, this was it for years and years and years, where like, when you get 25 minutes on stage that you just drove, you know, 15 hours to get to, and it's part of a tour that took 3 months to book, and 24 of the 25 minutes on stage, everything is feeding back and it's wrong and everything's broken. Our entire like attempt for things to be simple and clean was really just so that we could control it and not put a load on, you know, the Monday night intern who is figuring sound out and he's working for free, where we, you know, put it on us instead of constantly being mad at like, man, that club sucked and they trashed our sound, and like, that sound guy, he was playing Candy Crush and he wasn't paying attention to the fact that the kick drum mic was feeding back, like,
right,
you know,
right.
Because it's no one's fault if we drive 15 hours to a club that, you know, and play for five people that have never heard us and they don't care about us. If it's like you said, if we feed back and sound terrible for 24 minutes out of a 25 minute set, that band sucks. I don't have to ever listen to them again.
Yeah, exactly. I've been there. I've absolutely been there before, where I seriously, this band sounds like a bunch of amateurs. This is not fun to listen to. It's grating on my ears. It has nothing to do with volume, because I can handle loud. I bring earplugs, but it sounds like they don't understand their own instruments. I'm not paying attention to the artistic vision of this band anymore. Now, I dread every time the guitarist hits the higher strings, because it just sounds like nails on a chalkboard, and I just feel like, well, if the kid doesn't know how to play his guitar, there's other bands out there that do know how to play the guitars. I'll pay attention to them. And I've disregarded and thrown them to the side. And here, it might have been the sound guy's fault. Maybe he was playing Candy Crush and the dude just doesn't give a shit what the band sounds like, you know?
It could be. I think really what it comes down to is like, the knowledge that you have as a musician, man, being in a band, you're privy to stuff that people in the audience are never going to think about or would ever have to even be concerned with. So it's like, oh man, the set was great, but like, I wish you would have sang a little louder. Well, you singing a little louder has nothing to, like, you're singing loud enough. Like, right, chances are your vocalist in front of a rock band is singing way louder than anybody should ever sing ever.
Right.
But, you know, that's like, okay, cool. Well, the sound guy, he couldn't get the vocals loud enough without feeding back, so he didn't. That's one thing that we need to work around, because we can't afford a front of house guy to have out with us for $100 or $200 a night. Like, on top of the fact that you're basically paying to go on tour anyway, it's like, we want to have those things. It's just, this is where we are. It's the three of us, and it's taxing at times, but it's really just to be plug and play, as easy as it can be.
Got it. That's great. And people might not excuse me. People might not appreciate how much work goes into minimalism.
It's funny that you say that, because I mean, the amount of hours that I've put into programming this stuff and discovering and learning these things, like, it isn't trivial. For us to add a song to the set, it's like, cool, like, we know how to play the song, but I want to make sure that we can do that song the way that we want to do it, you know, 364 days out of the year. It is, and it's a ton of work, and I don't think that a lot of people are in, like, that's not fun. That isn't turning your tube amp up and going and jamming with a bunch of your friends and making rock and roll. Like, that is, but for me, I know that, like, the alternative is playing a pedal board and everything's terrible and I don't have fun and I'm bummed out. I know the payoff is it's freeing and things work the way that you want them to, and you're not sacrificing the sound or the end goal. Just do the work and it comes out on the other end, and it's, you know, it's, this has been working for us. It's been awesome.
Yeah, Shane had a lot of good things to say about it. He said, hang on, I'm pulling it up now. Definitely ask about their live setup. It's not typical at all. No cabinets, no amps. They run everything MIDI controlled through Ableton and other outboard gear, guitars, vocals, and even drums. It's incredible and it sounds amazing. So he said, I'll let Dave elaborate on it, but ask him about it. It's insane. So that's neat. It's neat that when you go there and just see something so clean and simple and not as many things on stage, it took 10 times as much work to get it there. And I know what it's like. I happen to play drums, and I know what it's like to use that Roland pad. Your drummer has it looks like an SPDSX. Am I right?
Yep.
I have one of those, dude. I get it. Like, you want that cowbell to not sound as high, and you want it to sound like a bigger, fatter cowbell. I need like 45 minutes to go plug that thing into my laptop and find it and move it to the pad that I want and trigger it right and everything. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes it would actually be easier to just put the freaking cowbell on my drum set, you know? But
yeah, and then make the sound guy get a microphone out and run another line just to mic your stupid cowbell. Exactly. And it's like, just... And that's why I never feel bad about doing the work, because I know that I'm saving somebody else the headache, even though I don't have my elevator pitch down for when it comes to, like, cool, can you guys explain what do you guys got going? And like, I'm like, oh, okay. Pitch. Yeah, I don't have it down. I scare sound guys every single night because I don't have a like stream for everything that's streamlined. I do not have an easy way of telling a sound guy the right thing yet. But every time that we're done, every time that the set is over, they're like, "You guys are so easy." So I don't know. It's like, yeah, I know. I just don't. I didn't know how to tell you that.
Right. I tried to tell you. Right. I promise this will go easy. Just let me teach you. Let me steer you in the right way.
That SPDSX is funny too, because we tried every other cheaper controller. Like, Jared doesn't use it as a sampler. He uses it as a controller, and he uses it as his module for his triggers, which are on his drums. And it's just like the price jump from any of the cheaper ones to that was it was pretty substantial.
It's an $800 unit.
It is. And I'll be the first one to say it's worth it for the amount of, like, the fact that it doesn't re-trigger and that it doesn't just, like, screw you up. It's so consistent. And Jared gets to be a drummer, and he doesn't have to change his playing. It's like, it just works.
And the fact that he can do a lot of it on board, like, not on the fly. You definitely don't want to be figuring that stuff out live, but the fact that you can literally go into the menu and move things around, all the equipment before that, you could also do that, but it was like, you're sticking like flash drives in the side and total nightmare.
Yeah, music, right? Music, flash drives and computers and Ableton and
yeah, look,
so musical, right?
Right.
I know.
How have we come to this?
And that was like, that was such an interesting part of doing all this stuff too, is like, for as exciting as we would get when we would figure out how to program MIDI clips to make, you know, 75 different values inside of our amp move across a period of time, or like Jared's drum set changes into different sounds throughout the set, and it's like our vocals and all these neat things happen in the background, but really it's just to hold the songs up. No one cares, man. Like, no. I don't expect him to, but I can't have a conversation with anybody else about it. Even musicians, guitar players, drummers, they don't know it. They don't care. And it truly 100% is not interesting. I'll be the first one to admit that. Mm-hmm. It's exciting because we're under the hood, and like, when things work, it's like you just want to high five somebody. But most of the time I'm alone, and it's like, oh man, I got the light to turn on. It's great.
You're a modern saint like the other, bodies washed in stone. Lay your safety net to recover, falling from your throne.
So let's talk about the fact that Hidden Hospitals is managed by you guys. You don't have any management. You don't have any, I don't think you have any crew even. It's pretty much just you guys riding around managing this entire thing, setting up your own tours. How on earth are you doing this?
It's not necessarily a choice. It's definitely out of necessity. I mean, we could just be a band and make music and then also be like, yeah, man, like, let's hope that somebody comes along and signs the band and, mm-hmm. you know, brings us into the fold and makes things happen. It's like, no one owes us that, and that's not going to happen unless, you know, really what it comes down to, and this is the thing that I talk to my closest friends about, like, Shane knows Jay Hall, and he and I talk about it, Jared and I, our drummer, talk about it, Aaron, our bassist, mm-hmm. like, it's not easy to do this stuff, but, like, really what it needs to come down to is, like, if you don't want to do it, don't do it. If it doesn't feel good to you, don't do it. And really, like, that threshold of, like, it feeling good and feeling rewarding mm-hmm. gets higher and higher the longer that you do it. Like I said, you know, all the gear and the programming, and it's the shows, got to make sure the shows are good. Like, the shows can't be terrible every single night that you go out and play. And they're like, for real, it's just, there gets to be like, you have to continue to grow, and no one's going to do that for us.
Sure.
And it's just the nature of things. So, I mean, like, the unique thing I think about our band is that we've always seen the trajectory of a song ending on stage. Like, we write this music, we go and record it, but, like, in the back of our head, there's still that kid that's super stoked to be, like, playing it live. Like, that's... Okay. It has nothing to do with showing off or being like in a spotlight. It just really comes down to the physical celebration of the music itself, the energy, mm-hmm. the reality of this. This is it in you, and it's coming out. And to me, like, the stage is the end of the line. Like, you, from inception of when you figured out that melody or that drum beat or that cool guitar riff, to when all the way through the recording process and the release, when it gets to the stage, mm-hmm. that to me is the end of the line. Like, that to me is it's, you know, it's true form. So
sure.
if we didn't have that, like, if we didn't strive to be out playing shows and being on tour, then it, you know, it would never really get its, I don't know, I hate to say it, but like it would, it never turn into that butterfly. It's supposed to, it'd stay in its cocoon forever. It never would have really, you know, seen the world. We right. need that. We need to play live. We need to do it. It's, that's for us. It's where we want to be. So, you know, nobody
we're taught
put
that,
us there.
We're taught that early on. I mean, when you were in third grade and you were getting piano lessons, you were getting ready for the what? What's the R word that we're all getting ready for when we play piano? The recital. In front of people. Your parents are going to be there. Your teacher's going to be there. Like, it's something that we've just adopted early on. As soon as you start playing an instrument, you're driving forward towards doing it in front of people. Why do we do that to ourselves? I don't know. But it's because this is an artistic expression, and I'm trying to get it in front of people. And I want to do it my way, and I want to do it right. Like you said, I hate to use the analogy of a butterfly. Don't hate to use that analogy, because, like, I'm trying to put this art in front of people. I want to do it my way. I want to have it look a certain way. I mean, painters go out on a limb and paint something and hang it on a wall and go, boy, I hope people really don't think I suck, but I'm not going to know till they show up and see it. So I just have to stand here and, okay, I'll be over here if you want to criticize me. And you just kind of have to go along with it. And that, it's all about that piano recital when you're a kid. And then you get in front of people and people, they give you a little bit of that. And it's not an ego thing. I totally get what you're saying, man. I'm with you, because it isn't about stroking the ego and making me feel like a rock star. It's about the fact that I built this thing from the ground up. This is how I want it to sound. I did it in front of you, and you acknowledged it, and you went, thumbs up, dude. I get what you're doing. That's all I wanted. I'm not in it for the free beer or the girls or whatever. That's stupid. It's just it's the accomplishment. It's just the, I finally scratched that itch. I totally get it, and I got that impression from being on Hidden Hospital's website for like 8 minutes. I swear, I just get the vibe. You know, I really do. Shane was dead on when he said this would be a good guest to talk to about this kind of stuff.
It's awesome, man. I appreciate that, because it's just like you're saying, it's you versus you, and you know, there gets to be a point when you show it to the world and it's not yours anymore. So that's like your one right. chance to connect, and it has little to do with, like you say, trying to impress people or hoping and praying that they love your art and that they'll tell you that they love your art and buy it. And like, that has nothing to do with it. It just has to do with like, I am going to set this free. And in order for me to do that and feel like these years worth of work going into this thing was worth it, it needs to be of a level that I'm comfortable with. And mm-hmm. you know, that's it. That's the moment that you can like breathe and have a, you know, that's it. And that's why I say it ends at the stage. That's what we work towards.
And that freedom comes when you're not on a label and you're not answering to management and you don't have to produce a pop song or something like that. Hidden Hospitals is doing it like from the ground up. You guys are doing what you want to do because you're not on a label. You are, you're doing your own thing. So we're going to do our own thing.
Interesting. Yeah. It's just where we are, man. I mean, we've definitely sought partnerships and we've definitely talked with people. And I think that there's an aspect of our band that doesn't necessarily ring out as like the hip and cool. And that's very intentional. Like, we don't want to be hip. We don't want to be cool. We don't want to be, I mean that in like, it's a little abstract, but like, I don't want to be what is becoming really awesome. I don't want to be what the trendsetters are like approving and okaying. And like, mm-hmm. It's not that we go against the grain. I just literally don't think that rock and roll is cool. I don't think that people know that they need rock and roll music. I don't think that it's come to a point where it's like readily absorbed again. I think that in the back of people's brains, we miss it because it's been gone for a really, really long time. It mm-hmm. died a slow death with like the same radio rock band over and over and over until it just went away. We made every other kind of music other than rock and roll because that's what rock and roll was, you mm-hmm. know? I think that we do our best to celebrate rock and roll in a contemporary spectrum with, you know, without really abandoning where it came from, that energy, that bombastic like explosion of human energy, which is what it is to me.
I hear that in the music too, because it sounded to me like a blend. Everybody always wants to compare it to what they're familiar with, you know, and I hear I hear Jimmy Eat World Clarity. I heard cool. Sunny Day Real Estate. And
that's awesome, yeah.
And I hear OK Computer Kid A kind of mixed in there too.
And, that's awesome, man.
And everybody loves those albums. So if you're going to blend those three together, hell yeah, that's great. But I also get the Mogwai influence in a weird way because I don't know the names of your songs. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I do. But I know that I was listening to one that really started off gentle, a lot of hi-hat, very notey on the guitar. And it was a live performance at a bar. Because I was trying to check out your stage equipment. Because Shane was like, you know, they have none. You have to see this. They have nothing up there. And the song started very notey and very, floating kind of a building kind of a thing. And by the end of it, your bass player was absolutely thrashing on that thing as hard as any metalcore band would be. And it just developed into this thing and it grew. And again, if I click on the 30-second sample on iTunes, I might not get that. You know, and I love the whole package, man. I really do.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. I think that it's a resolve that a lot of artists need to have is that, you know, it has nothing to do with numbers. Like, you want to have good shows and you should grow to have good shows. And we absolutely want to tour with bands. We do. It's not something that's ever been in the cards for us. I've submitted for tours and it just falls on deaf ears. But like, we have to play shows and we have to do it. It's like there's people that do this with us and hold us up and they are instrumental in this band existing. And it's like, it's a pretty finite amount of people. It isn't 200 people that pack a club out. It isn't 1,000 people that sell out things. It isn't us going, man, like there was only 300 people at that show. Like that show sucked. There should have been 600. Like it isn't like that. Right. We've had a couple of shows in the last couple of months where one particular friend of ours, he's been driving out from Kansas to see us play. Like he's driven out to Wisconsin. He's driven to Chicago. And I mean, I'm saying like he came to the Kansas City show. It's like, he owes us nothing. And there's no way for me to say like, thank you for driving all this distance to watch us do our art.
Right.
Like it doesn't do it. You know what I mean? And it's like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this. It's just that it has nothing to do with numbers, you know,
exactly.
Like us selling, this record didn't perform well. And maybe you're right. Like it's a good thing. It's alleviating to not have a label. It's everything that you can look at. There's a duality to things. Like, yes, we're free. Cool. The other side of it is we have to drive ourselves, like not literally drive ourselves. We do that. But I mean, like if the thing doesn't get done, it won't get done. If we don't fund the record, it won't get funded. If we don't put money into releasing the record, it won't get supported or marketed. If we don't pay to tour out to California, we'll never play in California. It's just, mm-hmm. It's cool because you see the return on those things being like, man, that was worth it. Like here's like we got these great memories, we've got this art, we've met these people, and like now it's a little easier to go and do it again.
Right. I've had this conversation before with people too. There is a correct answer to this. What do you want? One person to fall madly in love with your band, or do you want 20 people to hear your band? And the correct answer is both. Because I can't get people to fall in love with my band unless I'm playing in front of them. So you have to do the entire package. You have to go out there and you have to just lay it out there. You have to do what you have to do in hopes that that one person comes up afterwards and is like, you know, I just had one of those moments. And it sounds artsy-fartsy and a little ethereal and a little out there. But, I mean, Weezer? People are going to hear that Weezer really was the best. Yes! Weezer was the band that like kicked the dent in your head and made you go, wow, things are different. I've now bounced off that and headed in a different direction for a while. We can all go through our CD collection or vinyl or whatever, and we can say, oh, I remember where I was when I bought that, and that album is really good. I enjoy that album. But that one changed my perspective on rock drumming. That one made me more interested in hearing what the lyrics have to say than the dude screaming or sounding cool. That album, you know what I mean? Like it's moments, and you can't have all the moments. You have to find little tiny ones. Going back to your artistic vision with the photography, it's got to be a zoom in kind of a thing. You have to you have to really carefully look for that kind of stuff. If you just want it presented to you in this huge thing, here's everything perfect all at once.
It's funny that it doesn't happen that way. I think that it's also a little bit of human flaw where it's like there's no way to know that you need to look for those moments, because if you look for them, you're going to miss them. And if you're trying to catch everything all the time, do everything literally. Like if you're trying to do it all, you're never going to appreciate how hard it is to work for any one thing, because you're going to be mediocre at a lot of things, right?
You're spread too thin, right?
Yeah, and I think what it comes down to is like, and this is something I struggle with, it just has to do with like simply being present, being there to receive whatever it is that's going on around you. Because I just got to say in an interview that went out today, it's really based around that, like just being there to accept goodness, like to be able to make the most of what would otherwise be kind of drab. Mm-hmm. Like we travel around the country with a couple of my friends and we lift crap that's heavy and it's, you know, that's not fun. And you load onto a stage that smells like, you know, beer from the night before, and that's not that fun. And then the sound guy, he's 4 hours late and that's not cool. And like two of the bands want to swap slots, and that's not nice to do to someone who just drove 10 hours, but whatever. And then you find like it's all these things will always stack up, and like that's just the norm. Like that's your zero. Don't complain about those or glorify those. Find the reason that today is dope, and then that's it. Like zoom in on that, make the most of it, and find a reason to smile. And I think that that's like the one thing that'll keep a band together and to keep an artist making art. That's it.
I like it. Like where you're going with that. So let's cover one more thing here. I understand. I'm assuming your wife's name is Rachel, because I found her on YouTube.
It is. And yep. Rachel.
You have a musical project called Still. Is it Still Plus Storm? Still End Storm.
Still End Storm.
But you got to type in Still Plus Sign Storm. Wow. You and your wife also have a side project?
Yes, we do.
Busy dude.
It's okay. It's been awesome. It's Still in Storm is Rachel's songs, and I'm here to support it and do it with her, and it's was a really kind of a cool surprise, because when she and I met, I had no idea that she was a musician. We'd been dating and I had no idea. For real it totally snuck up on me. And we produce, Dylan Storm produces with Jay Hall, who Hidden Hospitals is produced with. It's the, you know, he's a close friend. He's done Surface Tension in both of our EPs.
Okay.
Jay Hall offered to produce and mix Dylan Storm. It happened in a much more like complex way, but like that's the thick and thin of it.
Okay.
And we went down to do this, and like Rachel made these songs. They're very like, her playing a guitar, it was like, cool, we're gonna get down here and make these recordings, we're not gonna use guitar. And that was like a really awesome exercise, because being in this position where I'm supporting and not driving. And also that one instrument that's always been a focal point in my recordings that I've been a part of is now off limits. Cool.
Hmm.
So we got to explore all of these new things and like find an identity in in minimalism. It's the sum of parts. Like no one thing makes sense on its own. It's when you put them all together.
Sure.
And it's been awesome, man. Like it's really cool for me, and I'm comfortable saying that Still in Storm is awesome. It's really great music. I get to say that because it isn't mine. And when I listen to it, I enjoy it. And just like we were talking about, it takes me back to a place and a time. And, you know, it never fails to affect me that way.
I love it. That's really cool, man. Super cool. And she gets the whole, obviously you kind of lucked out there because now you're married to her and she gets the whole musician thing. There isn't that dichotomy of the family life. Oh, okay, now I get to be the weekend warrior guy. Like she gets
it. Yeah, man, that's something that's wrapped up in itself. Because like, just like you said, man, that dichotomy, that reason that often causes contention, I always say this, like I found myself being defensive when we'd first met because I think I was expecting that. And then it just basically stopped me one day. It's like, you don't have to do this. Like, and now it really was disarming. It was like, well, now what do I do? I've been defending myself for 10 years. Like, I'm sorry I have to leave. I'm sorry I'm broke. I'm sorry that, like, you know, all those things. Like, it's stupid, but it's like, for you to be you and the best version of you, you've got to do something that makes you feel, you know, like you've accomplished something, right? Mm-hmm. Art, work, whatever makes it is, sense. Family.
Sure.
So it's been cool, and it is just the two of us, and there's a lot of music there, but it was an awesome exercise figuring out how to just do it as two people. And we've been playing shows. We did a tour in February. We've got a show on Thursday here in Chicago, and we're releasing a new EP this fall. It is cool. It's like, it's your best friend, and also, you know, going around playing shows, you're basically just taking a trip. Oh, and we get to play a show tonight. Cool.
Very cool. Yeah, that's neat.
Yeah.
All right, man. Good for you. Well, hey, that's great. This went very well. Oh, I do have one more thing written down. You have a website called M Statement.
I do. Yeah.
What can you tell us about that? What is that?
I own an LLC as a single entity, David Raymond, and I wanted to name it M Statement. To me, that was just M Statement. To me, is mission statement, and that really mantra of it is just do what you say you're going to do, and nothing more than that. If you just say you're going to do something, do it. And that's simple. It's like, oh, I'm going to mow the yard. That's going to get done. Oh, cool. I'm going to make this record, or I'm going to show up. I'm not going to let you down. Like, that's all it is. And it's kind of moved into a stamp that I can put on things that are all things music that are underneath this umbrella. And it feels good to have. It's just it's nothing that I'm pushing. It's just it's kind of a funnel for all things, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. And I was actually kind of hoping that's how you answered it. That's neat. You just needed you had to build a roof over it. That's all.
Yeah, it was almost necessary. Like, things kind of felt like they just needed this one semblance of a thread, and that was it.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. I'm going to have everybody, I'm going to have all these notes and all these links in our in the notes for the show. The Hidden Hospital's website, your Instagram is worth looking at. I'm not even on Instagram, but I know everybody else on the planet is. I'm just a loser who's not on Instagram. So I'm going to put all these links on there so people can check out everything that you're doing. I really want everybody to go check this band out with a microscope. Like, I don't want this to be background music. I really want to push that everybody pays attention to what you guys are doing. And Dave, man, I really appreciate the time. This has been great.
Yeah, I feel like the only thing missing was just having some beers. Like, I feel like we just had an awesome conversation at a bar, but, you know, from a distance.
That is precisely the vibe that I want with my podcast, is I want you to feel, if you ever cut anywhere near Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, that you have a place to stay and you have a place to come get a drink. And if it makes you feel any better, I drank two whiskeys while we were talking, so...
Oh, yeah. Well, that makes me feel better knowing that you feel better. I'm probably going to go follow up right now and try to catch up to you.
Attaboy. Good luck.
Yep.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. I appreciate this, Trav. It's been dope.
Yeah, send me whatever you want people to hear, and I will absolutely splice it into the show, and I'll make sure that it gets into people's ear holes and hopefully develops into a few sales for you. And I mean, anybody who's listening near Chicago, I hope you never heard of Hidden Hospitals before, and we got to introduce you to them, and now you're going to go, you know what? That dude sounded cool. I'm going to go check him out now. And hopefully you found a new band to go check out. All right, brother. Thanks for the time. I really do appreciate it. Tell your wife I appreciate letting me borrow you for about an hour and 20 minutes. And go have a couple drinks, brother. I'll be in touch.
Thanks, Trav. Take care, man.
Got it, sir.
Love you. Take care. Bye-bye.